Welcome to IMTV. I'm Alan Keyes, and this is Let's Talk America. We are in the midst, I think, of the greatest crisis I've seen in this country in our lifetime that could very well prove to be terminal. We are now seeing an adamant adherence in the Democrat Party to an understanding of things that I think is entirely incompatible with the fundamental premises on which the United States is based. And if we continue to follow what essentially is an increasingly communist, ideological, totalitarian, one-party rule kind of agenda that the Democrats appear to be pursuing, allied with an agenda that takes the understanding of rights, quote unquote, and divorces them from God's endowment, I think the country is inevitably going to fail. And that failure is not going to be a pretty thing. The best we could hope for, I think, is that we have some kind of division, like the Civil War. And unfortunately, that division would put paid to what we are used to calling our American identity. We have, in fact, been embarked on something that I think we ought to marvel at more than we do. When the founders of this country were establishing their claim to have some reason to be separating from Great Britain, the first cast of that claim had to do with the rights of Englishmen. And I think in the context of the present understanding of things that's being promoted by the leftists and the Democrats and so forth and so on, that way of looking at the world would be entirely compatible with what the founders were doing, you know, the American founders, that generation, when they started belaboring the king for what was going on in respect of the relationship between the ministers and the king's ministry and the king's rule and the United States. Because that sense that we are dealing with the rights of Englishmen is dealing with a particular group. But by the time the Declaration of Independence was written, the founders were taking a different tack, and I think it was because in order to make the argument that would justify their claim to self-government, they had to look beyond what were the particular rights of this group and that group. They looked to God and to God's understanding and God's endowment of what it is right for human beings to do. I think sometimes when we talk about rights these days, we of course equate them with our freedom. They are, of course, not exactly interchangeable concepts. Freedom is the ability and opportunity to do what you choose. That's freedom. You get to choose. Right implies that there's a standard of right, and it not only implied it when the country was founded, it explicitly stated it. And this is something we forget. The Declaration of Independence doesn't talk about rights in terms of the freedom to do what you please. No, it's quite obvious that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. That endowment by the Creator is therefore an acknowledgement that we're dealing with an understanding of right that accords with the Creator's understanding, the Creator who created the universe and therefore had a role in who we are, in our very being. For in one sense, that I think is now shoved aside a lot because people don't want to admit that this country actually had a foundation that requires that you examine the religious tenets that held sway at the time the country was founded. And so that reference to the Creator was a reference in the end to a Creator who then appeared as Jesus Christ, walked the earth, and preached an understanding that wasn't targeted at English people. And it wasn't targeted at white people, and it wasn't targeted at Chinese people and black people and Russian people and this people and that people. It was targeted at all humanity, because Christ claimed he came to save the whole of humanity so that we would return to a path that walked a walk correspondent to the understanding of the loving God who created us in the first place, and therefore of the very warp and woof, not of our being as this group and that group, but as our human being. I think we have now wandered a good bit from that. But the thing we have to ask ourselves is, why is it taking place right now? We see a grave challenge to the underlying premises of the country, to such a degree that I think you have a lot of people now who would rather take the Declaration and push it aside somewhere. Get out of this God thing and get out of this idea of unalienable right. Get out of the whole thing that forces us to be preoccupied, not with our predilections and not with our choices, and not, by the way, with our preferences, but with what is right according to the Creator, according to the one whose being is the being of the whole of the universe, including our own. We forget that, don't we? There is no being other than God. There is only those things that are manifestations of God's way of being for his particular purposes. And in our case, those particular purposes at first were all about creating us in such a way that we would be in relationship with God, and at the same time, we would have the choice, so that we have that opportunity to exercise our freedom. But the Declaration suggests that we're supposed to do it according to the standard of our Creator, and that's going to produce the best results. But I think we're now under attack. Why are we under attack? Because somebody wants to usurp that notion that there is a transcendent understanding of right that is not just about doing what you please and what you want to do, or worst of all, what you have the power to do. See, I think that's the fundamental difference between, if you want to call it that, the ideology that underlies America, the understanding of things that underlies the United States of America, and the understanding of things that has been the underlying premise of the communist regimes that have risen to occupy a role now in our politics that I think a lot of us thought they never would, because we were a people already in some way so well informed that we were beyond being trapped in that understanding of who we are. It's turning out that that's not true. And why is it not true? Because we're not that people anymore on the whole. We have a whole lot of folks who actually despise the foundations of America. They want to drive God and religion and everything else out of the picture and act as if the only thing that matters. When you read Marx, if you don't come away with the impression that the only thing that matters is who has the power, then you haven't read him carefully enough. And if the only thing that matters is who has the power, then all the other discussions are irrelevant, because there is no standard except who wins. Is that who we are now? Because that's not who we are supposed to be. And people talk about slavery and everything. Oh, we had these bad things in America's past. I'd be the last person to forget that. I think that's pretty obvious as to the reason for it. But on the other hand, I also know that what in the end was achieved in getting rid of slavery was not achieved because people suddenly decided that slavery was the worst thing you can imagine. No, it was achieved because they recognized that the underlying premise of America is incompatible with enslavement. It's incompatible with denying that there are right choices and wrong choices, and we must stand together as human beings in order to pursue the right ones. And that difference is the difference that matters most, not the difference in skin color and national background and so forth and so on, but that difference between those who care about the standard and those who do not. Well, my guest today is somebody I think who's been in a lot of ways thinking this through, perhaps in a sense that we don't see that often in our political discussion, certainly, but I think even in the common sense discussions that are now in an agonized way being carried on by a lot of Americans. She's the author of a book that talks about the premises that we sort of take for granted, even though I sometimes wonder whether we even want to understand them anymore. And she does it in the context of something that she's been studying and looking at for a while now, which is communism. She had an experience with it when she was a student and has carried that forward so that she has produced a book that kind of points to, I think, the flaws of communism, while at the same time forcing the reader to start thinking through why we so blithely assume that they are flaws. And I think what I just said has something to do with that, but she gets into it in a way that I think is special and deserving of a lot of thought, which you will benefit from pondering. My guest is Julie Beeling. And I want to welcome you to the show, Julie. And I've been looking forward to this because I think that you have been making an effort to do what our politicians these days don't do so much, which is to say, to examine what we ought to not be ashamed of calling the ideological basis of our polity, not of communism and Marxism and fascism and so forth and so on, but of our polity, and how what the communists do is actually exploit what is increasingly our failure to understand that basis so that they can substitute for it something that in essence takes our spirit, our soul, and our ultimate objective, which we have in common as human beings, balkanizes our country so that our character in reference to that ultimate objective is no longer a cohesive one. I think they're trying essentially to disintegrate the people of the United States. And that's not all that hard to do at one level, since we are now a nation of nations, a people of many peoples. If there is any hinge that you can push against, it's the hinge of our diversity. People say, oh, diversity is a wonderful thing. Yeah, but it implies differences that can become a wonderful target. And I like the way you've thought through the targeting mechanism, as it were, and what it implies. Welcome to the show. And could you tell folks a little bit about both what you have written in the book, but also the journey that got you to be focusing now, I think, on these essential aspects of what is essentially a war against the very existence of our people?
Absolutely. So in the late 90s, I was actually a missionary in Russia for a year and a half. And, you know, it was pretty soon after the collapse of the Soviet Union. So I witnessed the aftermath of almost 80 years of communism and definitely met a lot of traumatized people, especially older people who had been alive during the Stalinist era. And it was a really interesting time to be in Russia. And then I came back from that, and then I ended up getting a dual master's in Russian language and literature and Russian and East European studies. Mm-hmm. And then for my master's thesis, I wrote about underground Christian movements in the Soviet Union and their survival tactics and the tactics of the Soviet state to demolish them. And I focused on the period from post-World War II to perestroika, because the early tactics of the Soviet state against Christianity was just a sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mass incarceration, mass arrest, torture, you know, death, executions. So after World War II, after the death of Stalin, there was a shift just in general in the Soviet Union, as I'm sure you know, and that also involved Christians. But what happened is they got a lot more strategic with their efforts. And so I discovered that the three major anti-religious tactics, I discovered what they were and studied them in depth. And then I also, you know, studied how those Christian churches, which, by the way, I mostly studied underground Baptists, Pentecostals, and Seventh-day Adventists were the three major religious groups that I looked at. They were the largest and most active. And then I had all my materials for my thesis. I defended my thesis, I guess it was 21 years ago now, put all my materials in the boxes in the closet and let them sit there for a while. But in 2008, something happened that really, really piqued my interest, not in a good way. One of the tactics that the Soviets used against Christians, and they only did this to the fringe Christian groups. They didn't do this to the mainstream Christians because they actually infiltrated those churches. They infiltrated, they attempted to infiltrate all of them with KGB agents, actually. Literal KGB agents were sent into the churches as pretending to be clergy. They would also try to bribe current clergy to spy for the KGB. But in any case, one of the tactics the Soviets used was removal of children from Baptists, Pentecostals, Seventh-day Adventists, people that were considered cultists. They were they had a very bad connotation in the Soviet Union. They were foreign Christian sects, and they were very easily pegged as cultists. And so the government would just, oh, you're teaching your child to pray. Sorry, that's a danger to the child. We're going to take the child and put them in a state-run orphanage so we can groom them and, you know, try to pound some atheism into them. And what I saw here in America in 2008 was there was a very, very unpopular religious sect that had tanks and helicopters and snipers show up at their premises, even though they were nonviolent, and remove all their children without due process. And so I looked into this further, and then I really sat down and looked into all the three tactics that the Soviets used, and I found them all in place in America, including the infiltration of the churches for almost up to 100 years. This was when I began writing this book in 2008, 2009. And I wrote most of the book by 2011, but then I just couldn't quite finish it. I set it aside. And then in 2021, I was like, I have to finish the book now. And I caught it up to modern day, and boy, we're basically just driving off a cliff now, because things have gotten so much worse with the infiltration of education, with Marxist ideologies, and the infiltration of even evangelical churches now have been a major target from the top to be infiltrated. And so yeah, in my book, Beneath Sheep's Clothing, The Communist Takeover of Culture in the USSR and Parallels in Today's America, the first third of the book is showcasing, you know, what this cultural takeover looked like in the Soviet Union, especially in regards to Christianity, and then what this cultural takeover looks like in America, again, going back in some cases over 100 years, funded by really big money names that everyone would recognize, that people most usually consider these people part of capitalism, but yet they were funding funding communists to infiltrate. So,
well, I guess one of the things that crosses my mind and during our talk is that there is an element now in what I take to be the attack on the religiosity that underlies America, right?
Yeah.
Because there are various kinds of religions and religiosity, not all of which are threatening to communism, by the way.
Right.
Communism can sort of devour them or tolerate them and so forth and so on, because they don't have an implication that in some sense, it doesn't nullify, but since Christianity is actually, though people don't like to think it through, a different way of acting on what is the stated goal of a lot of these communist regimes,
right,
which is to benefit everybody, to have right, everybody working together. You can call it collectivism, call it whatever you will, but you're going to work together. There is a premise to it that implies that the end state is going to be a state of cooperation across all kinds of lines of difference and so forth and so on. But I think that what is going on at the moment, which is prominently featuring something that is challenging, very challenging to the Christian underpinning. And I think that's LGBTQ, et cetera, the whole alphabet soup. Now, why is that so challenging? Because Christianity is, at the end of the day, I mean, Christ is who? He's the Son of God in the Christian understanding. Therefore, you're focused on God.
Right.
If you're focused on God, you're focused on creation. If you're focused on creation, you're focused on God's understanding of the way of being that allows the creation to exist, right?
Yeah.
And it seems to me that we are now being attacked in a way that through things like LGBTQ, they target the underlying, how can I put it, manifestation of that working together
right,
to do God's will, which is the family. And I think they're trying to denature it,
oh yeah,
and destroy it so that absolutely, the government then relates to everybody as if they are just kind of isolated individuals who then will have an identity poured into them
absolutely,
by the government. Am I making sense?
100%. That's 100% what is going on. And, you know, yeah, the family is one of the major ideological enemies of communism, as is Christianity. And so the cultural Marxists began to take over the institutions. They it was a group of intellectuals that realized that classical Marxism, you know, it had worked to some degree in the Soviet Union, but it was not spreading to the West like they had hoped. So they're like, we have to rework this. They decided they needed to infiltrate key institutions of the West, the moral hegemony, as they called it, the family, religion, education, media, and the legal system had to be infiltrated. And this was decided in like, you know, the 1930s and 20s even. And so that's when this really began in the West. And yeah, we're at a pretty end stage, almost at an end stage right now, because there's so much acceptance for pure insanity. Drag queen story hour. Some churches are inviting drag queens for drag queen bingo and drag queen whatever's in the church, some churches. One of the most shocking things to me during my research was that it's highly documented that by the mid 20th century, upwards of half of America's mainline Christian churches were very heavily infiltrated with communism from the top down, through getting Rockefeller funded clergy in the seminaries and then disseminating that. And what they did is they hijacked the Christian goal of, you know, you do good to one another. And they took away, what they did is they capitalized on that, yes, and they replaced it with social justice. And then they wanted to actually kind of ignore the whole issue with Jesus being God and kind of downplayed that and just tried to steer everyone towards social justice in lieu of actual connection with God and relationship with God, which true Christianity, in my opinion, focuses on.
Mm. Yeah. Well, see, I think that then means that you are luring people into a position that denies the first premise of their capacity for self-government. Because I think the first premise of their capacity for government is the capacity to understand that your choices and your responsibilities are not just about you, right?
Yeah.
Now, I would argue that to a certain extent, they are doing that in order to expose us and our vulnerability so that the cohesive framework for our existence as a nation collapses. It's not because they actually believe in LGBTQ and all kinds of things. No, I think that in point of fact, there's going to be a rude awakening for a lot of people if communism ends up taking over. And maybe that would be a good starting point for our continued discussion in the next half. Y'all, sit right there. You don't want to miss this. We'll be right back.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact system allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Hey, well, I got to get one of these.
In recent years, the world has only become increasingly more chaotic and uncertain. Disruptions to the supply chain have resulted in global food shortages, making it difficult for us to access the very resources we need to live in a functioning society. That's why it is now more important than ever to be prepared for the unexpected. Here at Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, we've made it our mission to help you and your loved ones be prepared for any emergency, which is why we are dedicated to bringing you a wide selection of ultra-clean and lab-verified superfoods, supplements, preparedness items, and other health products. So support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Hello, this is Dr. Judy Mikovits, and I just so appreciate Mike Adams and Brighteon TV and giving us a voice back. as he's provided us the opportunity to talk. We're coming here from Mannheim, Pennsylvania, in the Clay Clark Reawaken America. So thank you, Brighty on TV, and Mike, appreciate you.
Welcome back. I'm having the great pleasure of talking to Julie Bealey. She's somebody who has been, as we all are, I mean, I think a lot of people of good faith, good heart, who kind of still have a deep affection for what the United States is supposed to be, what Americans are supposed to be. I think we've all been involved in an effort to think through why at this moment it looks as if something that I think, Julie, the United States actually succeeded beyond the wildest dreams of the founders. I don't think they anticipated that this country would become what it became in terms of our leadership in the world at large.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not sure that occurred to them as a possibility. But what they planted the seeds of grew into that in such a way that we are now, I think, on the cusp of offering humanity an example of what everybody says they want to see happen,
right?
Which is the maturing of a human race that celebrates diversity and difference, but not at the expense of our common humanity. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
And I think what distinguishes us, therefore, from the communists is that when Marx did his writing and when it was then applied by Lenin and Stalin and these people, I think they were not, in point of fact, aiming at an objective that would necessarily be positive for the whole human race, because they thought in terms of masses instead of thinking in terms of that fundamental communion of spiritual and other elements that is the real goal of God for our humanity. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
What do you think has led us in the course? I think it's become sort of critical in the course of the last 30 years. And you mentioned part of it, which is the infiltration of these key institutions by communists and others of ill intention toward our understanding that makes us a nation of nations. But why did we become so vulnerable? Because something happened in the course of the 20th century that kind of opened the door to a corrosion of our understanding of the premises of our existence. So that I would have to say, from a lot of politicians, from a lot of the oncoming generation, I think most people aren't even aware of what those premises are anymore.
No, I mean, well, getting a hold of the education and the media, that was huge. But as you already alluded to before, they identified very early on that the biggest Achilles heel of America were race relations between Black and white. And so that was a huge wound that they were able to capitalize on. And of course, the way I see Marxism, I define it as a playbook for subverting a nation and weakening it to such a point that it will fall to communist rule so that the new power structure can come in place. It's all about power, as you said. And Marxism will locate any weak link that it can, any group of people. It looks for a group of oppressed people. Okay, here's a group of people who are oppressed or who think they're oppressed or can be made to believe that they're oppressed. How can we become a parasite on that? How can we create make this group have more anger, more grievance, and stoke them to anger? And then what they've also done here in America, of course, is not just focusing on the groups themselves, but within the schools, using a brainwashing technique with critical race theory, queer theory, and gender theory. How do we create allies from the mainstream majority to get them to also join in tearing down the systems of power so that there's a power vacuum and the new power structure can come in place? The weak link was the race, the wound between Black and white, then getting into the education system and the media, and it's a slow decay, a very slow decay. But we're just in the end stages now. And I mean, I think I think there are things we can do to prevent it from, you know, fully fruiting for them. But I mean, we've got to take some pretty massive action pretty soon. That's why I'm turning my book into a documentary to try to reach more people. And really the culture war, you know, if a majority of our nation can be made to believe and be brainwashed that it's okay to have drag queens, you know, with kindergartners in the public schools without parental permission, which that is already happening in some places. If the majority of people can be made to believe that whiteness is an evil that must be destroyed, which of course, as you, I'm sure you know, is just racism against white people. Right.
Well, see, that's part of what I don't understand about the hold this is having, though, because I can understand what they're up to. Mm-hmm. But frankly, I don't understand why it's having any success in this country with more than a handful of people. Because at one level, yes, America has a problem of racism. There's no doubt. That racism tied, by the way, to another kind of problem, which was materialism.
Yeah.
Yes, because at the end of the day, there is a connection between the practice of slavery, the existence of the institution, and the hunger for material goods and material success and so forth and so on.
Right.
At the end of the day, the ideology of communism holds on to that material hunger. That's what power is all about. Yeah. And if you actually steep yourself a little bit in Marx and Engels and all that, you realize these people worship power.
Yeah.
That's their flaw, their main flaw. But Americans, by and large, even today, I don't think we do worship power. We have, amongst our elites, we have a class of people who certainly do. But in the population at large, I don't think most Americans worship power. And therefore, they are, how can I put it, a more complex version of humanity than the communists were counting on. But why suddenly would we become so susceptible to something that is actually, in terms of its rationale, weaker than what we have relied upon with success, by the way, because progress has been made in all different kinds of areas that address, for instance, the power-driven, materialism-driven evil that then leads us to tolerate the enslavement of humanity. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, when you examine the communist countries, I'm sorry, the most important communist countries are slave states. That's who they are. North Korea is a slave state.
Yes.
China is today is a slave state. Russia is something that we can pray and hope is emerging from the slave state, but under the thoroughgoing yoke of communism, it was a slave state.
Yes.
So how can we miss this? They're not defeating slavery with communism. They're establishing and perpetuating it.
Absolutely. It's because, as I'm sure you know, Marxism, communism, it operates like a religion. Mm. And when it's introduced to people, certain vulnerable people, especially when they're young and it's a brainwashing, they're literally brainwashed. And with having this in the schools, with having so many of the churches subverted, well over 50% of America's Christian churches, in my opinion, and our culture now with even the cartoons that they're showing to the kids, it's all filled with ideological subversion of American values and principles and understandings. So it is literally operating like a religion. They have had decades and decades and decades to fine tune how to capture the minds and the hearts of the people. And most people, they have good hearts and they want to help the oppressed. And so they fall into wokeness. I have friends who are victims of this that in the last few years have lost their minds and are social justice warriors now, woke social justice warriors. But in their heart, they truly do desire to help the upliftment of society. And they've been allowed themselves to be brainwashed. And they don't all, here's the other thing, we don't know what communism is. And that specifically was done to leave this out of our history training here in America, is what communism is, what it has done, what it is doing. It just so happens that my major professor for my degree in Russian herself was a former Soviet dissident and with a very deep hatred for communism. And then I spent 2 years in the primary sources for my thesis and saw the bloodbath. So. That's why I understand it.
But. What conclusion did you reach in your studies as to why that bloodbath has been so characteristically a part the development of communism, but it's still juxtaposed, whether it's in Russia, even in China and other places, with an existing culture that had other underlying premises for why human beings should do what they do and what is the goal of what they are doing. Most of them, by the way, I think, having in common a focal point, and that focal point was the family. And I'm wondering, why is it that in the course of the latter part of the 20th into the 21st century here, what was, in my opinion, a kind of common ground in the understanding of what makes human life worthwhile, so thoroughly abandoned mm-hmm. by the very people who were benefiting most from its application in America, but other countries influenced by us and by the Christian understanding of what government should really be like. You mm-hmm. see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I find this hard to fathom because there were aspects of what we have done that work to achieve the good objective they claim to have in mind, whereas right. the communist countries didn't work that way and still don't to this day.
Again, it's brainwashing techniques that get people to abandon logic. I mean, the Russian people are very intelligent people. And I just in graduate school, I was like, how did they bamboozle all these people to go along with this insanity? And now it's happening here, just as absurd. Well, communism, once communists get in power, one of the first items of order are to eliminate the possible threats to their power. That includes educated people, scientists, artists, anyone who could be a potential threat. And, you know, Stalin took that to extremes with the purges, where it was mm-hmm. just insane. And then why are we falling for this here? Again, we don't know what communism is as a whole. We know what Nazism did. But in the schools, no one ever studied communism. I never learned about it when I was in high school or undergraduate. We don't understand. This is why people have to be, we have to show people, and I'm hoping I'm doing my part to show people this is what communism does. This is how Marxism works. It's the same pattern. And once you see those patterns, once you see those fruits of communism, which again are impoverishment, enslavement, and death. Those are the three major fruits of communism. Then, you know, it can hopefully wake a few people up before it's too late, I hope.
Well, see, I think that what you have described there leaves me with the impression of a vitally important sort of vacuum that somehow was tolerated because we were not, in the first place, teaching the real grounds for our way of life.
Right.
And for the amount of success that we achieved in bringing together. I think by now, as I often say to people, we have representatives in fairly significant numbers of people of every race, color, creed, and kind on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
That's the first achievement. Mm-hmm. To bring humanity together on a common ground that then invited us to all call ourselves by the same name.
Right.
It's the name American for the United States, but it's actually underlying it all the name of humanity. Yeah. Because that's what the country was founded on. That was the shift that occurred from Englishman, which is a racial or ethnic or whatever you want to call it designation, right? To yeah. all human beings. The Declaration is written in terms of all humanity and what is intended for us by God. But the other thing I kind of marvel at is the underlying premise of all of that is also a kind of responsibility. And for the latter half of my life, practically, which is like, I suppose, around 35, 36 years now, we have been emphasizing things that don't present people with the basic challenge and therefore achievement of the American way of life. So we too are leaving something out. We're leaving out the understanding of what it is that made our relative success possible and what would allow us to continue that success. And at the same time that that's going on, you have people now, in terms of the education of oncoming generations, seeing that vacuum, knowing that there's no there there. They then come in to sell a bill of goods that represents a failed and, I think, anti-human way of governing.
Yes.
Why that neglect? I've been struggling with that in my own thinking for a long time. How did we get to a point where we failed to pass on the essentials that would explain not why there was, you know, just why slavery ended and so forth, but why people committed themselves, whether it was in the fight against slavery or the fight for civil rights or the fight for a greater equality amongst different sexes and different people of different backgrounds, that these fights have been more and more successful. Why do we live in a context where we deny ourselves an understanding of that success? Because that's what we need to hold on to. We have done some good things. How do we do more should be the question, and yet it's not even being asked.
Right. Well, I mean, you go back and you look at the foundations of public education in America, and yes, there have been positives with public education, but it was founded by individuals who had they were socialists, and they had done their research. They did some test markets in China on the peasantry in China. Of how they could mold the minds of the people. And they discovered they could mold minds quite effectively and make in one generation's time, they could transform a society with their operant conditioning training, which is like Pavlov's dog. And so they brought this to America from the get-go, John Dewey, and there's so many others. In my book, I lay out 10 ways in which America's education, how did we get from where we were to where we are in our education, the infiltration of education. And from the get-go, it was these socialists who had really instituted public education. At one time, we had Carnegie and Rockefeller paying more for universities than the government paying more for the schooling. And so these big monopolistic capitalists were actually some of the major funders of communism in America. Why? Because power, in my opinion. And to maintain their power generationally and to keep the masses down. And so, yeah, you don't want to empower the masses with such information like you were just saying about, you know, the American way. You want to train them in such a way that they will be dumbed down and subverted little by little. That's what
we're down to a little less than 5 minutes now that we have together. I hope you'll come back at some point.
Yeah, I would love to.
Because I think you have done some extraordinarily good thinking for quite a while now, and you're sharing the fruits of that with folks. But it also, I think, allows you to see in a way that you're clearly articulating very, very well what we might do to remedy this situation. But here's, I guess, the question I thought we might do well to go out on. Why is it that since the premises of our country were so obviously based on an understanding of right that made God indispensable, that made love indispensable, that therefore made a loving response to our responsibilities to God indispensable? Why have the churches backed away from what is essentially their responsibility to influence the citizens of this country? Because the premise of our citizenship is based on the Christian ethos, and yet they act as if they can turn away from that ethos and the country is going to survive. I don't understand this. I think the churches have a special responsibility to the polity.
Yeah.
Not to become political, but to make everybody understand that our politics can't be what it's supposed to be unless we understand it in the way God and Jesus Christ did. Am I making sense?
Totally. Yeah. Well, I have a whole chapter in my book on the infiltration of Christianity in America. And, you know, we have beginning in the early 20th century, again, people pay to go in and head up, you know, some of these seminaries and subvert Christianity right there in the seminaries with the National Council of Churches, which roughly half of America's mainline Christian churches belong to. Then other efforts to infiltrate, of course, the tax law 501c3 thing, you know, is a bit of a gag order on the churches where they can lose their their 501c3 status if they speak out politically. I think there's a lot more going on. I think, and I explore this at length in my book, and there's not really time in these 2 minutes to share my whole view on this, but we've had two instances in America where our government came after two very unpopular fringe Christian sects, and in one case, a lot of people died, I believe, at the hands of the government. I'm talking 1993 Waco, Branch Davidians, and then I'm talking, there weren't deaths, the El Dorado Ranch, FLDS Ranch in Texas in 2008. That was a warning, in my opinion, against any Christians who step out of line and go against the status quo. We will bring the wrath of the military power against you. We might take your kids, you might end up dead. So you better fall in line. That's part of it. I think there's a lot more to it than that, but it's a kind of a lot to get into right here at the end.
See, I think that what you've mentioned there means that they're relying on us not to be a courageous people.
Yes.
And yet, the very essence of what we thought we were was the land of the free, quote unquote, and the home of the brave. Now, what is the relationship between those two things? I think that there is a fear involved, but for most of our history, it was the fear of God, and the fear of God doesn't make you timid.
Right.
It makes you brave. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Because if you are consciously living out your obligation to God, then you are fortified in your commitment to do what you do because it is right.
Yes.
And I see hope if we can somehow rediscover and start to re-energize that real impact of the Christian faith, which then makes people stronger. Whereas what I think is going on right now is an effort to make our common identity as a people to destroy it.
Yeah.
On the basis of isolating us within a paradigm of ourselves that no longer longs to fulfill the responsibilities of our humanity to God. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, we're going to have to come back because that it's down to 21 seconds, and I think we have barely started to scratch the surface. But I really hope you will join me again at some point, reasonably soon, if you have opportunity, because you are a wealth now, I think, of insight into what is ailing us, but also what we can do about it, which I think is more important. So God bless you. Look forward to seeing you again. I hope you all benefited from that. We'll be back right after this.